Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, electric or hydrogen? What is the vehicle technology of choice for the future? How to spot greenwashing? We have an interview with Ethical Lives. And can you run a bus with cow dung? Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Morning, Mike. That last one sounds like a crap story. I'll give you a pat on the back if it works out.
How long have you been preparing those?
Hours.
That's dreadful. Anyway, also coming up are our sustainability education, the news, eco tips, behind the scenes, and sorry, Russell, we have a guest edition of Fact or Fake. We'll also be talking about McDonald's, Microsoft, Ocado, GM, B Corps, USA, Norway, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Brazil, helmets, wood, rockets, glaciers, sharks, squirrels, and cows. So, electric cars are coming fast, but are the national grids up to it? We hear lots of story about major automakers increasingly betting that millions of new cars and trucks of the next decade will be plugged into electrical outlets, not fueled at gas or petrol stations. And I think we see every week governments saying all cars to be electric by 2030 or 2035, yeah, or some such date. And all the major manufacturers, whether it be GM or Toyota or any others, VW, are all saying we've got lots of electric models coming up.
Yeah.
And that's great. But today, a stat I saw was fewer than 1% of cars on America's roads are electric. And I think that's a similar statistic elsewhere. But obviously a big shift is underway. But that presents a few issues. Because you think about it, you go to the petrol station where there are some electric charging points,
yeah,
and you charge up, and instead of a couple of minutes to fuel your car,
yeah,
you're leaving it there for
half an hour. At least half an hour. Yeah, I was thinking about this. You know, if you were very generous and said that, including the whole payment transaction, that you spent 5 minutes on a pump per car, you're looking, yeah, at 12 cars an hour per pump. Yes. Now you're looking at probably one.
Yeah. So you're going to need more space, more land.
You're going to need somewhere between 6 and 12 times more locations to charge than you have petrol pumps.
Yeah, yeah. We're also going to need more electric, 25 to 40% by some estimates.
Well, some of those charger units, some of these cars who do the rapid charge, basically have two plugs. You know, they've got a super, yep, fast one. So the draw that goes into push that,
yeah, is, yeah,
powered, you know, well, it's not 13 amp plug stuff.
No, that's another issue. Greater capacity to premises, not just to charging stations and, you know, specialist petrol stations and service stations, but actually to homes and businesses and anywhere else that wants electric car charging. They might need greater power, and a change in the schedule in the peak times, because, you know,
yeah,
it isn't necessarily when everybody goes to put the kettle on in the middle of the football. Instead, everybody's going to come and charge their cars overnight, or,
yeah.
So instead of less demand overnight, there's going to be a shift to potentially more demand overnight.
And we know, and especially in the UK, that, you know, right now, because of it's not too bad at the moment, but last week when it was very cold, 6% of our electricity was being drawn from coal when we were at peak. So if people are taking a trip and they're plugging in at 1 o'clock for their midday recharge, versus they have a bite to eat, they're probably drawing part of that energy from burning the dirtiest fuel source.
They are. But the trouble is, renewables, you get, you know, lots of wind when it's windy and sun when it's sunny. And so renewables come in peaks and troughs. And
they do.
We've discussed storage and batteries and things before, and that doesn't exist at the moment. So does the profile of renewables fit with this new type of demand?
Yeah. And so, the whole grid. Really.
The whole grid. So there's great, let's all go electric. Ah, but the grid can't cope and our infrastructure can't cope.
Or we end up burning 15, 20% of our electricity getting it from coal.
Yeah. However, there is a knight on a white charger riding over the horizon. in the name of in the name of hydrogen. So we've seen hydrogen cars. They've been around for quite a while, actually, 20, 30 years.
Hi-ho hydrogen?
Hi-ho hydrogen, yeah. Not silver, hi-ho hydrogen. It's been around for a number of years, and people have been developing it. However,
yes,
you might say that hydrogen's a really clean energy because, you know, most of the H2O in water is hydrogen. But the process of getting that hydrogen out to power cars and planes and trains and all those sorts of things, there's a kind of a byproduct of that process which may be polluting. So hydrogen isn't without its problems itself, burning hydrogen, separating out of the hydrogen to make it usable. It must be separated from water, coal, natural gas, or animal plant waste. So that extraction process is a problem. It's also really, really expensive at the moment. Really expensive.
But we've always had that, haven't we? Where a new technology, once they've worked out how to properly industrialize it, and they can do it safely. It was always the problem with hydrogen. There was this little concern that it was a bit explosive.
Yeah, well, storage and transportation of it is another major issue, because you're effectively transporting mini bombs around everywhere.
Yeah, which would be a bit of a bad opportunity for some. Having said that, you know, an electric car with that amount of battery storage power is could easily cause fires and such like itself.
But at the moment, your average electric car may cost in the £15,000 to £25,000 or dollars range, whereas your average hydrogen car is in the £60,000 to £80,000 or dollars range for the two or three models that are actually available.
Well, to be honest, since we've said on a number of occasions that the top 1% are 10,000 more polluted, 10,000 tons more, 90%. Then maybe they should go out.
They should go and buy the hydrogen cars. Yeah, yeah.
and planes and everything else. You know.
So it's a really interesting challenge, and love to know what listeners think about this, because we are the messaging coming from governments and from motor companies is a mad dash towards electric, but that has its problems: cobalt mining, charge times, actual capacity on the grid to make it happen. And then we hear that hydrogen, you know, might be this savior, but that's again not without its issues. So, you know, are we being pushed down one route when actually the correct route for the long-term future of the planet may not be to go full in on electric? It's an interesting challenge.
It's going to be probably the best of the worst, or the best of the good bad news. I don't know how it is.
Talking of challenges, now time for our February monthly challenge. We've moved on from tech recycling and we're now on to education. And we put out on social and last week on the podcast and said, well, what terms do you want to be educated in? What terms do you want defined? What do you want to understand? And we've picked a few terms that we're going to outline today, and we'll put some useful posts out across our social and our website so that people can go and look at these for reference and say, okay, what do these things mean? So this week we're starting with some really basic terms to hopefully get a common understanding, and let us know what you think about these. If they're not simple or easy to understand, then we want to know, because we'll refine them until they are simple and easy to understand. So I'm going to kick us off with global warming. So what is global warming? And we think global warming is a gradual increase in the overall temperature of the Earth's atmosphere, generally attributed to the greenhouse effect caused by increased levels of carbon dioxide, CFCs, and other pollutants. So that's what we think global warming is. And there's some debate as to why And but there's no debate as to the fact the world is heating up. How much that's due to our use of fossil fuels is a debate.
Yeah, global warming, it happens. It's happened.
It is, absolutely.
Many times over the billions of years the Earth's been in existence. So
there's
nothing new here. And what people are disputing is whether human has an impact on it.
But so I think it's important to say in the definition we've given, it doesn't refer to who's responsible and why that happens. It just says that global warming is this gradual increase in the overall temperature of the Earth's atmosphere. So, what have we got next, Russell?
So, obviously, global warming is looking at the globe as a whole. And you could probably add into atmosphere ocean temperature as well, I expect, but that's another matter. So, but the way we feel global warming and the impact of global warming is in the change to our climate. So our second definition is climate change. As I said, it's climate change changes because of global warming. So, for example, about 18,000 years ago, much of the Northern Hemisphere, including Britain, where we live, was under an ice pack and covered with glaciers. So it is normal for us to go through climate change. And as I said, ignoring how climate change or global warming is happening, because that's disputed, climate change can be said to mean the increase of the temperature of the atmosphere and the oceans, causing changes in weather patterns around the world. Now, unfortunately, rising temperatures sounds glorious because I'd like to be in the Maldives at this point, big and freezing here, but it's not. We don't feel it by having sunnier days and longer summers. We feel it by having extremes of temperature, extremes of weather. And we've seen that in floods and freak snowstorms and hailstorms. And
all those stories we talk about,
So it's just an extreme and unpredictable climate that we're facing because of global warming.
Next up, carbon footprint. So do you go walking on the sand, Russell?
Well, I have the privilege of being quite close to the sea, like you did.
Yeah, I do. So we walk in the sand. If you do walk in the sand or on some soft earth, you notice you leave a footprint. It's a sign that you leave behind, showing that you've changed things. And that footprint stays until something washes away. So everything that you do in your daily life involves carbon. And when carbon is stored in the earth or trees or plants or ourselves, it's locked away. However, when we burn wood or dig stuff up like coal or oil, we release that carbon in the form of carbon dioxide into the air. And that leaves a mark in the atmosphere, or a footprint, you could say, a carbon footprint. Now, the size of depth of that footprint in the sand, if you imagine, depends on things like your size, your weight, if you're carrying something, how fast you're moving. And similarly, each person's carbon footprint is different and is dependent on things such as what you eat, how you travel around, what fuels you use, and pretty well all the things you get up to, really. So really want to define the carbon footprint and get people to think about it in the sense of a footprint, that footprint you leave, that mark you leave. And pretty much everything you do leaves some kind of mark.
There's no doubt you can't avoid having a carbon footprint.
No.
But that kind of brings us on to our final one for this week, which is net zero, which is a phrase it's an indistinct target, mainly because nobody's defined what net zero truly means. So this is our stab at it. Many countries and companies have, and even individuals have declared that they're looking to achieve net zero in regards to their greenhouse gas emissions. Maybe we'll talk about greenhouse gases in another show soon. And the emissions, these greenhouse gas emissions, including carbon dioxide. And the idea of net zero is, first thing you do is you see how you can reduce the size and depth of your carbon footprint, going back to our footprint in the sand. So, stop doing stuff or burn more efficient fuels or more use renewable stuff like that. And then you follow up to do the net zero, because we cannot avoid leaving a carbon footprint in what we do. Even when we die, we leave a carbon footprint.
Well, don't do that then, just yet. You know, if you could, yeah,
please don't.
Hang on till the end of the show, at least.
Yeah, at least know what you're missing.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is follow up with actions which then wash away the carbon footprint or fill in the carbon footprint. Now, many times we've moved to, I was referred to offsetting, and maybe that's we'll cover that again. Planting trees has been the big savior. We've got a news story in a minute about Microsoft, haven't we? Their problems with trying to achieve this net zero. The problem is the technologies that truly needed to draw these snappy, whizzy carbon capture things aren't really in mass production, into industrialized production yet. And so a lot of these companies are making declarations, and countries are making declarations of net zero by 2050 on the basis of no fixed solution. Yes. So net zero currently is a idealistic target of getting rid of your carbon footprint and coming up as if you hadn't walked on the earth.
Yes. So we will put that in simple, plain language across our socials, so that you've got four definitions there.
Yeah.
And we'd love some feedback. Hopefully they're going to be simple, clear, easy to understand, and definitions that everybody can align behind. So moving on, we talked about net zero, but one of the issues, as Russell just mentioned, was how to tell if a company's net zero goals are serious or just greenwashing, because there are huge swathes of companies now that are setting net zero climate goals, which we think means they'll cut their CO2 emissions as much as possible, and they'll then offset anything that's left with carbon capture. The number of companies doing this has more than tripled over the last year, so that's, you know, quite a large uptake. You know, climate scientists are saying that society as a whole needs to reach net zero by the middle of the century to avoid the worst aspects of climate change. But the issue we have is not every net zero target is the same. And a report from the New Climate Institute has looked at net zero pledges. And one of the things they found, as we've just discussed, is that there is no single unified definition of what net zero actually means. And there are many different definitions of what it should mean. So we're going to run through some points now to say, if you see a company saying we're going to be net zero by whatever date, you can have a look and say, well, is that real or is it just greenwashing? So going with the first point here, do they have any other targets, interim goals, or is it just a net zero goal? We discussed Adidas last week and their net zero sustainability aspirations. And we can see quite clearly that Adidas had projects across the board in all manner of different areas, as well as a net zero goal. So clearly it wasn't just greenwashing. It was, you know, it was a serious attempt by them to go net zero. But if you see a company and they're just saying net zero and nothing else, there's a good indication it might be a bit of greenwashing.
Yeah, they do. They do need to make steps all the way through, because you can't just go net zero like that. And and as I said, the technology is just not there. So a lot of this comes from, are they making steps to reduce their footprint before they start to try and capture what carbon they have in the air anyway?
And that's a good indication. One of the other points is, are they already cutting their footprint as quickly as they can?
Yeah,
because if they're not, if they're just trying to buy their way out of it, then it's not really a net zero attempt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, as much as I absolutely support the fact that the forest, and we've lost a lot of green cover, and planting forests is absolutely the right thing to do, it's not the be all and end all. It takes 20 years to make a tree carbon negative. So you can't rely on that. And actually planting them now, they only just become effective just before 2050. They're not going to be sucking carbon out of the air for a year.
For a long time. And that's an interesting one. Which offsets are they using?
Yeah.
Is it tree planting? Is it some kind of water conservation effort? What are they actually doing for their offsets? Because they may say we're offsetting carbon, but do they tell you? And that comes on to another point, is how transparent are they? Are they actually telling you how they're offsetting, how they're reducing, what their plans are. So there's kind of five or six things you can look for when a company says we're going net zero to tell if that's actually real or whether they're just greenwashing you and just trying to put a bit of marketing spin on it to make themselves look good.
Yeah. I mean, you can always look for B Corps, and B Corps are going to companies that are registered as B Corps, and we'll bang on about this because it is.
We will do. It's B Corp month in March.
And it's B Corp month in March. Thanks for that. And yep. But there are many B Corps that are signing up to a net zero a campaign, but that's well defined, and you have to set your targets and you have to go through it. Yep. We haven't done ours yet, but we will.
Yep.
Because it's quite a commitment to go net zero. You can't do it, and you can't be. And if you greenwash on the back of it, you will eventually be found out, even if it takes 25 years.
You will do. So, on to some other big sustainability news stories from the week. And up first is McDonald's, or not quite McDonald's, the world's largest McDonald's franchisee, which is Arcos Dorados Holdings in Latin America.
Yeah.
They have got a program to reduce their plastics, and it looks like they've done an awful lot over the last 2 or 3 years. 1,300 tons of single-use plastic removed from their operations. But they are now moving to a sustainable alternative to the standard plastic food tray. The new trays from a Brazilian company called Semaza Comercio de Plástico Limitada.
Well done.
I thought you'd enjoy that. The new trays are made with UBQ, not barbecue, but UBQ. I don't know what UBQ is, but I quite like the fact that it was very similar to barbecue. So, good news from that franchise in that they're replacing the plastic trays.
Brilliant. Well, that's thumbs up, because it's a massive franchise and very, very popular. Is. So, we do want to see Microsoft reduce its footprint. So, keeping on with the footprint, we got Microsoft. I mentioned earlier. Now, Microsoft pledged something quite amazing about a year ago, which was that they would become carbon negative. So that is that they would remove more carbon from the atmosphere than they put into it. And what they also said is it would remove the equivalent of all the carbon dioxide it's released since it was founded.
That's a lot of
that's carbon. 45 years worth of carbon to remove from the air. Now, wow. I mean, that's quite a commitment to do that by 2050. So hats off to them for really stretching the boundaries of what they're trying to do. Have they come up? They've experienced a windfall, let's say, of 6% through the pandemic.
Yeah,
as many companies have, because people haven't been traveling. They can definitely count those benefits, but they need to do that 6% cut every year, and then go into the negative. Yep. And what they found is their quote is, today there is no real existing carbon removal ecosystem. That's the key quote, and it goes back to our previous ones. Is this not there yet? There are ideas and there's good concepts,
but it's not reality at the moment.
And you know, Microsoft is still producing a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide. I think 164,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent was released, but they need to cut that first, shrink their footprint, and they're going to have to invest heavily in trying to industrialize carbon capture. But
what is there and what is real is an eco shop on Ocado.
Yeah.
So this is an online food delivery service, and they've set up a store which is purely got products from B Corps. So the whole store is just B Corp products. You see things like Innocent smoothies and juices, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, Alpro kind of yogurts and milks and smoothies, Actimel. So all those kind of B Corp brands are all together in one shop, and you can order them online through Ocado. So just giving that a mention, that's a really good wraparound service for a lot of good B Corp products.
Yeah, I do like that. It's quite interesting because a lot of those might be disputed by some environmentalists or sustainability people that they shouldn't be using milk in their ice cream and Greek style yogurt and stuff like that. It's not that it's not vegan. B-Corps is not a vegan thing.
No, it's being imperfectly perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, and it makes us sustainable. We need an economy as well, and also some balance. So GM has thrown the cat amongst the pigeons in the American motor industry.
Yep.
When the new president, Mary Barra, who's the GM's chief executive, came out against all previous proclamations that GM have made, trying to get executive orders on climate change and releasing some of their controls, the environmental controls that the government were putting in. And she said they're going to sell only zero emission cars. Quite clever, not electric, zero emission. That does leave it quite open. And trucks by 2035. Mm. They shocked the other automobile people because they normally go together and say we'll do this together and we'll announce all at the same time.
Well, it's aggressive, you know, the development life cycles on these things are 7-8 years, so
yeah, and they got
starting yesterday to do them.
Interesting fact in the article I read there: Wall Street investors think Tesla is worth more than General Motors, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Ford put together. And all of those just, you know, are looking at that going, hold on, we used to be top four, now we're number one, all of us, and it's just ridiculous. So the change is coming, as we said in other articles.
Certainly is. Talking about change coming, some news from a variety of governments now. Let's start with the US. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about Joe Biden being a very busy boy on his first day in office. And it seems that he's continued to be very busy in the climate space. So that's kind of good to see. Some of the things that he's done over the last week are pausing oil and gas sales on public lands. He's setting up a new civilian climate corps. He's signed an executive order to cut fossil fuel subsidies. And on the back of the GM story, he wants an all-electric federal fleet. So he's really, you know, putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak, following through with, you know, not just those big initial rejoining Paris agreements and, you know, headline pipeline stops. He's actually following through with the smaller things and carrying it through to every area of kind of life and government.
So do we need now to have a section which is the Biden half hour?
I'm not sure we'll do that, but maybe we have the Biden bites and we could just, you know, soundbite the quick things he's done this week.
And perhaps we can bring this out on our clubhouse room on Friday.
Maybe we could.
The Biden effect.
Yeah. More on that to follow.
Interesting quote from a former GM executive I saw. And now I think he's now a senator, or he's in government in the US now. And he said, he said to the automobile companies, if Biden gets in, you ain't going to know what hit you. You're just going to have to move. And so he might be proving his way. Norway, however, a little bit an interesting story here. I didn't know whether this was a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Norway have one of the biggest wealth funds in the world.
They are one of the wealthiest countries.
1.5% of the world's money.
They are one of the few. They're one of the few countries that are still AAA credit rated.
Yeah, because they got money.
And why have they got money?
Because they got oil. And gas.
Yeah.
And although what they have done with this massive fund, the investment fund, which is to drop completely out of investments in gas and oil, on the other hand, they've got a bit of a paradox that they have. It says here, on January 19th, Norway granted 61 licenses for offshore oil exploration to 30 companies. So the country's investment fund, brilliant.
Yep.
Fingers up, thumbs up. You're out of it as an investment. Oh no, but it's all right. we'll let other people invest in it.
Yeah, it's a challenge they've got. I mean, a country that has their economy based on fossil fuels, like Norway,
yeah,
has a challenge over the next 20, 30 years to completely transform that.
And of course, some of their land sit in the Arctic Circle as well.
Yeah. So speaking about countries whose economies are completely based on fossil fuels, on to Saudi Arabia now.
Yeah.
And we talked about sound bites and Biden bites. The Prince Abdul Aziz bin Salman, who's the Saudi energy minister, has been talking to a global summit of energy leaders, and he says that Saudi Arabia are leading the way in the climate change fight. So, oh, that was interesting. What are they doing? Well, whatever they do in the kingdom, they're going to support emissions reduction. We're going to be a reasonable and responsible international citizen. And we're going to set the pace in tackling the global energy crisis. When the tough got going, the going got tough, or when the going got tough, the tough got going. I've been energized by the energy of Luth. We have to maintain our hands on the situation until we're more comfortable that people are using vaccines. And so I read this and I thought, they're not leading anything on climate change. They're not even doing anything on climate change. There's nothing about what he has said that has anything to do with any reductions or any good stuff on climate change. He's, you know, really is just saying empty statements.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, Saudi Arabia, but that's no good.
You know, you have Lorem Ipsum, and we've enjoyed corporate Ipsum.
Yeah.
Perhaps we actually should have
climate Ipsum
as well, which is where they just spout.
Oh, that is a brilliant idea. We need to write some climate Ipsum so that companies and governments can take some climate Ipsum and just paste it in when they need an empty statement on climate.
We could make a fortune on that. Yeah.
We could be the ultimate greenwashing resource. But, yeah. Anyway.
What's happening? To keep it, well, I mentioned about Norway, and they've just done their 61 licenses, and they're in the Arctic Circle. Another area in the Arctic Circle is Russia. Siberia's got its toes in.
Yep.
And there's been a lobby offensive by Russia's biggest oil companies to push for more relaxing of the eco regulations. I mean, this is quite a complex little story. So, and also it's got names in it I'm not prepared to say.
Coward.
Yeah, I ain't doing what you did. I tried to practice one of them. But they're putting a lot of pressure on to drill in nature reserves and in places that are previously regulated against, and getting them.
Yeah.
One, for example, they said that in 2019, the Russian government adjusted the borders of a national park in the Tamir Peninsula on request from the company Vostok Coal.
Yeah.
Coal in a name is never going to be good. No. So
so it seems that just as we're getting Biden, who's reining back on those, you know, exploratory drilling works in the Arctic, we've then got Russia who are expanding and growing into that as well. So
when we're wanting eco-regulation to go up a pace...
Yeah, and talking about eco-regulation, onto Brazil now, who have cut their environmental monitoring and firefighting budgets in the last year. I think I saw they cut them by up to a third. I'll pull the exact number out. But yeah, so deforestation is going up. Fires are going up. And yet, Brazil has cut their budgets within government to deal with those things.
Well, bizarrely enough, and I don't know if you watched it, Mike, I watched the start of the dialogue on FACT, which is the Forest, Agriculture and Commodity Trade dialogue, which is part of is kind of running up to COP 26 in Glasgow at the end of the year. And so they've opened the dialogue, and they did an hour long launch where if you skip the fact that the first 13 minutes was waiting for the thing to start, in about the first 10 minutes, they have I don't know, 20 ministers of agriculture or ministers of ecology or something like that, including Brazil, Argentina, Chile, all the ones sitting on the Amazon forest, saying we are committed to dealing with commodity trade and that it's a sustainable end. And then you see a story like this where they go, oh yeah, by the way, on the other hand, we're going to cut costs. I don't understand really how they can be so two-faced and so transparently two-faced. Yep. At least being transparent about it, I suppose.
Yep.
So on to a little bit more of technology news. ESUB has launched a bicycle helmet, which a concept bicycle helmet, I have to say, because it looks fantastic.
It looks like wearing a saucepan on the top of your head without a handle.
I've never seen really too many graceful bicycle helmets. They all just seem to sit proud. But this one's got, my goodness, it's got solar panels on it. It has a battery in the back. It's got a cytoelectric microphone that accepts basic voice commands. It allows you to turn signal indicator lights on because it's got proximity sensors in it. It's got bone conduction speakers so that you can hear stuff without it actually going into your ears and therefore blocking out traffic noise. It's got a bonkers stack of stuff. Now, as a cyclist or casual cyclist, you know, and having to wear a helmet is just for safety. This, of course, you do see a lot of cyclists out there with earphones in, and it is a problem because you can't hear the traffic.
Yeah. And solar powered. And lights up and things, but yeah,
with some quite and indicators, you know, some really great stuff on there. I can't deny that. It's a concept.
More technology now, and we've talked a lot about lab grown meats and lab grown chicken, and some interesting discussions about that. But the latest in the lab grown lineup is now lab grown wood. Researchers at MIT are now doing. Lab-grown wood, they say they can quickly produce it. Instead of taking decades to grow the wood, they can just grow some plant cells that resemble wood, and they can tune it to be whatever shape they want. So you could grow a cricket bat in the lab and not have to wait for the tree to grow. So, I mean, that's a really interesting concept. And I think lab-grown wood is something that people will be far quicker to use. They haven't got to eat it or put it in their body. So, you know, using an object that's been grown in a lab, why not?
It's interesting and preformed, possibly. I'm guessing it's quite an interesting concept. No less engineering going into something that's grown. I always wonder about these things. What's the, you know, to grow something usually requires inputs and outputs. Mm. Primary output, but you know, what's the impact of these things really? But hey ho. Does it capture carbon is the question. Anyway, talking of carbon, we now have a groundbreaking biofuel rocket. And the BBC the BBC article says, could be Uber for space.
Brilliant. Next time I'm on the moon, I am going to order myself a biofueled rocket.
Yes. Yeah, okay. You can imagine, you know, looking on the app and it's your Uber rocket is nearly here. Where are you going to? Japan. You know, it's a biofuel rocket. It costs less per kilogram than traditional rocket fuel.
I heard this on the radio the other morning. And the interesting thing was the kind of the inventor of this fuel said that they wouldn't reveal what it's made of, but it's made of ingredients you can find on any farm, they said, which is interesting. And they said you could also probably eat it. So that was just really interesting. So I'm gonna order my Uber, and it's gonna come with something to eat on the moon. Oh, brilliant!
Please, sir, don't eat the rocket. We're still traveling.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it time for rolling out carbon eating machines? Is the headline. Direct air capture machines are the machines. They essentially capture some air and they scrub CO2 out of it. And there's lots of these around. We featured some bike wheels a few weeks ago. As you're riding along. So there's numbers of different devices and machines that do this kind of carbon capture and extraction from the air. But I would say, yes, it definitely is time for carbon capture machines. And there are any number of places where we could put this, you know, any number of fans and turbines and places where air is going in and out. You know, why would you not
chimneys put on, that are spewing carbon that would help? Yeah, yeah.
Any air filter, any chimney, you would just put filters on. So, I've just answered their story for them. Is it time for an emergency rollout of carbon eating machines? Yes it is.
The carbon eating or presumably carbon grabbing, which then needs to be put somewhere. There's a question. The carbon storage. So looking a little bit further into nature, sad story, shark populations have decreased by 71% in 50 years. And also there's rays are also plummeting as well. I mean, you don't have to say much more than the headline, really. Overfishing of sharks and rays has jeopardized the whole health. And of course, they are part of the food chain. So what will happen is something that's perhaps more destructive to food, to plant life in the ocean will now thrive and it'll eat all the plants and then there'll be no food. And then it's like such a, we keep on unbalancing the world, but now they are listed. The great hammerhead shark and the scalloped hammerhead shark are now listed as critically endangered.
Yeah.
Very bad.
Talking about out of balance, Western economies have been shipping their waste to Asian countries for decades. And in Malaysia, in 2019, the government shut down 170 illegal recycling factories because they'd had global waste from other countries. China also issued a waste import ban in 2018. So also 225 containers filled with plastic waste were returned to 21 countries. That was from Malaysia last year. And as a result of that, the Malaysian government have adopted a mandatory, they're calling it Extended Producer Responsibility Scheme, EPR scheme. And this is something that other countries should definitely adopt. And what it does is it obliges producers and importers to assume full responsibility for the products they offer to the public, not just during consumption, but the end of life. So the whole life cycle of a product is the responsibility of the producer. And that is something that I can't think of many countries that do that. If you were to say that for any device you make or manufacture that you're responsible for the whole life, you wouldn't see, I think Coca-Cola is one of the biggest polluters, their bottles and their lids and things hanging around the environment, because that would be Coke's responsibility.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well done. Round of applause to the Malaysian government for taking that on board.
Yeah, and they've been very hard on waste because, of course, we dumped a lot of our waste on them for years in the guise of recycling. Yeah, Talking of waste, brilliant piece of work done here on home deliveries. Now, of course, COVID-19 has seen a massive increase in people having home deliveries of fast foods.
Yeah. Not that I've had any. I was just saying, food really. It was just the mention of food.
And I'm getting quite, I'm feeling quite sanctimonious at this point. So or justified to it. It's an Australian study, placed 27 million online food orders in 2018. 27 million online. Now expected in 2024 is expected to be 65 million. And what they did is they analysed the CO2 emissions behind each of these orders and concluded that the best... Now, let's start with the worst. The worst meal to have delivered is a burger meal. Plastic straws, liquid paper cup. Paperboard cup with plastic lid, cardboard cup holder, and of course, probably beef. the best going up the list, let's say Thai, pizza, Indian, and topping the or bottoming the anyway, the best,
least worst, I think is what we're looking for.
That's the word, is the Chinese. It's bit of a fine line between 0.16 of a kilogram and 0.29 of a kilogram. But if you want to half your emissions, instead of having a burger meal, have a Chinese.
Or make it at home is probably the best option.
It is. Or if you're really desperate, take a walk.
Yeah.
To your local Chinese. Maybe. You lazy git.
Just a quick one for, and listeners, please go and follow the link on this one. There's a really interesting graphic on the disappearance of a glacier in Iceland, and they've got a really interesting representation where you can slide a slider across from one side of the image to another to see the real disappearance of a glacier between in the last 30 years. And it is just unrecognizable, really, the difference.
What's the name of that glacier then, Mike?
The glacier is called the Skaftafellsjökull glacier.
Yeah,
something like that.
I think. I also see one. I'll do one as well, just because it's irritating. The images of now I got it.
And since we've lost the ability to speak, I think that concludes the news for the week. So today I am delighted to welcome to the show Emma Jones from Ethical Lives. Good morning, Emma.
Morning, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thank you. And I'm going to jump straight in with the most important question and the thing that I'm really dying to know about Ethical Lives, vodka. So Broken Clock Vodka.
Yeah.
Firstly, how did the name come about? Do you know?
Well, I'm just going to explain about Ethical Lives just momentarily. Okay. We're a community and we partner with brands, so we're not producers.
Yeah.
The Broken Clock Vodka is actually distilled in Wilmslow in Cheshire in the UK.
Yep.
And it comes from a love of the English countryside and appreciation. And the idea is slowing time down.
Okay. So that's
a broken clock. So not taking you back to your university days when you were doing vodka shots or
Well, I did wonder it maybe when your eyesight's not quite working, you can't see if the clock's working or not. But
it's very much about, you know, savouring it and sipping it. Like, so obviously gin's been very popular of late, and like bringing vodka back.
Yeah,
and it's got a very unique kind of flavour to it, and the bottle's gorgeous.
No, it looks great. So Emma, so Ethical Lives, what brought you to, you know, starting this shop and company? Because it's been around for a few years, but not quite as long as you've been around. So you know, what was it that brought you to this point?
Yeah, so that it comes from a number of places. So my background's marketing. I've got 5 years marketing, and I've been through a proper journey with that one. So I've done like the whole FMCG, big conglomerate, you know, TV shoots, thinking it's all very glam, all very kind of like 90s, you know, absolutely fabulous, darling. And then I started working with smaller brands when I became a mum. I think your values change when you're a mum anyway, because you just
become
a parent, I should say, rather, apologies, you know, because you just become less selfish, more aware of the fact that you're going to be passing on the world to somebody else.
Yeah.
It needs to be in a good shape. And so when you're doing advertising with a big budget, it's very easy. And you can do a lot of things, but when you haven't got a big budget, it's a lot harder. You have to be more creative, more innovative. And then I've worked a lot with small businesses in international trade. That's like my profession, if you like. I'm actually at the Institute of International Trade and Export.
Okay.
So, carbon footprint becomes very aware, supply chains become, you know, high on the radar. In this year in particular, obviously.
Yep.
So even I mean, it's not that all of China is unethical or unsustainable. That should be said. You know, obviously what it is very far away. So you do have that carbon footprint that needs to be accommodated for. But also there are a lot of smaller producers of amazing product in the UK or you know, France, all over the world. What it was is it came from a real passion to, right, okay, it's just awful the way the climate is. We know that because of all the initiatives that, you know, His Royal Highness Prince William and David Attenborough, Sir David Attenborough, are doing with Earthshot. But there's a need to get these brands out there. They've only got a small voice, like Broken Clock Vodka.
It's really interested in one of the points you made, and perhaps explains why the audience of the Green Elephant Show is as it is. You said that when you became a mum, it was at that point you thought about what you would be leaving for your children. And that's really, and maybe that is why, and maybe our listeners can let us know, is why we have such a high predominance of female listeners, because they have this, you know, parenthood thing which makes them think far more than men about, you know, what they are leaving behind for their children. It was a really interesting statement you made. It was,
well, I think it's also, without being sexist, but you know, it's a lot of the females that make the decisions of what are bought for the house. And I think so when you're buying for your kids, but it's also like, you know, what do you consume? You become more aware about your body when you're, because it changes so much.
I wouldn't know about that, but yes.
God, what's happening to me? You need all these things. So then it's like, and when you're feeding babies as well, it's obviously about guessing, making sure they have the right nutrients. I think you just become aware of these things a lot more. And then it's also, obviously everything's cleaned all the times. I suffered really badly from eczema, actually, when my daughter. So I'm allergic to a lot of the foaming agents in a lot of these products.
Okay.
So I've always had to use like bars of soap. And funnily enough, like I said, so I've been lucky enough to go to France to Provence every year. So I've always bought Provence soap because it smells really great. It's made from natural ingredients in the habitat, and it doesn't have like all the foaming agents in. So that as well.
We'll come back to that when we get to fact or fake, and that might be coming useful. But so the Ethical Lives shop and brand, it does a number of different things, doesn't it?
We're not just a shop. There is an option to shop, but you get, so the idea is that consumers have a real benefit. Okay, we know there are a lot of people out there that really want to be as ethical as they can, but don't always have the time, because if you're a parent, you're very busy. Whether or not you're working, you're just still really busy. And a lot of it is about convenience, which is why, obviously, all the convenience has done very well in the world because of that consumerism. But it's more about the conscious consumer. So it's trying to make it easy for them to find alternative products to their everyday lives or to enhance it, you know, but also give them a discount, because sometimes there is more of a cost and obviously having to suddenly pay for somebody else or whatever, you know, so money's tight as well. So the idea is that we offer a discount, as it's like an introduction service to these brands. And then what we ask is, because they get the discount, is that they do a customer review. And they can do that in a number of places, whatever they're easy with. And they can do it on their own social media feed, or they can do it on our website. And then what we ask is, and then I send over like backlinks and the hashtags, because then that helps with the brand's online visibility.
I mean, it's such an easy exchange, isn't it? It makes sense if you're going to get, I don't know, I've seen 20, 30, 50% discounts on your site, and in exchange for a post on social media that says, I bought this product and it was really great. You know, what's that cost me apart from a few seconds of my time? You've helped yourself, You've helped Ethical Lives, you've helped that sustainable brand, and you've kind of not bought something less sustainable in the process. So it kind of seems to work all round, I would suggest.
Well, that's what we think. We think it's a win-win. It's a win for the consumer because we are our clients, they want to be ethical.
Yeah.
You know, so we're giving them products that they're looking for anyway, but at a discounted price, you know. And like I said, you doesn't have to be a monologue. It's not, we're not asking for like War and Peace.
No, no.
Did you like it? Did it work? That'll do.
Yeah.
So, what did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? And if you didn't like it, let us know. And then the producer can address that, because it gives the producer a chance as well to make their products better.
Yeah, that feedback is
businesses, because they get an introduction to more consumers and then they benefit. I'm an SEO nerd, like I said, marketing background.
Yep. So
they benefit from all the off-page SEO and all that. Oh, I go to technical on tags and hashtags. Everyone understands that now anyway. And then hopefully by coming together, we're helping to save the planet.
Yeah, and I was going to say that feedback for the suppliers is invaluable, because getting honest customer feedback about how good or bad your product is difficult and expensive.
Absolutely. And so, just consumers as well, you see. And the thing is, the reason why we prefer it be on their own social media, because then they are letting their peers know, because women talk, you know, their ideas.
I'm not making any comment on that.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea is that if you really love a product, then you would want to tell that, you know, you'd want to share that product with your peers and let them know.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not just a direct purchase. I saw there was a subscription option as well.
Yes, sorry. Thanks for picking up on that. So, yeah, there's two. You can either subscribe, in which you get to choose from the shop which product you want a month. We don't decide. You can choose. Okay. Or you can just do a one-off purchase.
Yeah. No, that sounds good.
The subscription, actually, is that we have... So my business partner is a personal trainer, UK qualified... She workout videos on there and like healthy recipes and fitness guidance, just all around wellness. So it really ties in the idea of the ethical as well.
Sure. I was going to come on to the wellness piece, and I saw that there was some kind of fitness and wellness stuff. Is that part of the subscription service? And
yes, it is. It's true.
Okay. Yeah. Really, really interesting. And the partnering with the small producers, that was a really interesting concept. And so when I first looked at this, I kind of thought, oh, this is, you know, is this drop shipping? Is this, you know, bringing in things from the Far East? But the way you've explained it, it makes absolute sense that there are all these small niche providers of really ethical products that are just looking for an outlet and looking for a voice. So how do you go about finding those suppliers and deciding which ones you want to use?
Yeah, I do a lot of research online, obviously. Okay. And then it's just coming to an agreement with them. I mean, one of them actually, I found at one of the markets, you know, the farmer market.
Okay.
And I just went there and... it was this lovely lady called Karen. Her brand's called For the Love of Earth. And they are very passionate about saving the orangutans. And
yes.
So it was, so she had this cream, like a lemon balm thing. My daughter really wanted it, so I bought it. We got talking. She had all this literature about the orangutans.
Okay.
We got talking and I just went, no, I'd really like you to come on board, you know. So, and she does like vegan wraps as well. So...
Yeah.
Obviously from cling film and things like that. So yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, it's great to know that it's the products aren't just from a catalogue. They've been individually selected and sourced and chosen so that you know the people behind the products.
We're very close to them, actually. I mean, that's it. We are a community. We do see ourselves as a community, you know, to share and discuss. Yeah. I mean, that's it. So like the Living Pure Natural, that brand, I've known for a number of years, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And those recipes come from ancient Greece.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all olive oil based.
Yeah.
They're used by some very well-known people, but we're not permitted to say who, which is unfortunate, because if I was to name drop, you know, then everyone would want it. But they are as well, and they're very much about the smell, and it's like that luxury feeling as well. So yeah, there's some great ones. And then and we've chosen them all for different regions, like Earth Scents. It's absolutely 100% plastic free, you know, and Andrew behind that brand, he used to work for, he's done the big corporate life like myself.
Yeah.
He actually used to source the upcoming ingredients for like your big FMCGs. So he knows exactly what are the fillers, what are the active ingredients, you know, he knows what's there to mask in like your toothpaste, you know. I should also say, we use all the products ourselves. I actually do subscribe to the service.
And so which is your favourite of all the products that you sell?
Yeah, I do.
Which one is your favourite?
See, they're all different, aren't they? That's it. I don't really have competing, so they can all be my favourite.
It's like picking your favourite child, isn't it?
But it is, yes. Over Christmas, the Brocca was very popular.
Brilliant, Emma. Now we ask all of our guests to tell us about a book they like or a book they'd recommend, and it can be any book from any sphere of life. So is there something you think the listeners could, you know, benefit from reading?
Well, you see, yes. Now, I said I'm an SEO nerd, so I read online. Okay, I'm sorry, I know that's bad. Apart from obviously reading my Wind in the Willows to my daughter.
Yeah.
Actually, she's reading that to me. So anyway, and 1001 Nights. It is, if people are in business and they're small business owners, I highly recommend SEO, SEJ, which is Search Engine Journal.
Okay.
That is just, it's online, and it's something that I regularly read about.
Okay.
You get your website seen.
Yeah. And what we'll do, we've got, as well as the Green Elephant Show, we have our Planet Device business and a guideline, which are more business focused things, and we'll share those recommendations out there. Emma, it's been an absolute joy to learn more about ethical lives and to find out how close you are and how much you understand your suppliers. That's just lovely, absolutely lovely to see, and unusual, I would suggest. How can our listeners get hold of you? What's the best route to find you? Is it
I would say, obviously, the website, which is www.ethicallives, so that's ethicallives.com. As you will point out, the reason for the K is because there are seven principles of ethics.
Okay.
And with the K, because we're changing it, it's because we're trying to change those ethics and modernize.
Okay, yeah, right. So I think there's Facebook and there's Instagram and things as well.
Facebook's just at Ethical Lives, again with the K, and IG is ethicallives_lives.
Brilliant. So we'll put all of those links in the show page. We'll, if you follow our social at Green Elipod, we'll put those links out on there so you can link up and go and see and find out more about the service. But yeah, Emma, thank you for your time.
Cheers, Mike. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
So on to some quick eco tips. And since we've been talking about electric cars at the top of the show, we thought we would just bring you some really quick driving tips to reduce your emissions, be more efficient, and probably save you a bit of money as well. So first of all, before you drive, remove any weight you don't need in the car. It's going to cost you more fuel and burn more fuel. So if you've got anything in the car you don't need...
I'm trying to lose weight, Mike. Don't go on about it.
Yeah, if you've got Russell in the car... Put him outside and then drive on. So remove any unneeded weight. Next, we have inflate your tyres. When was the last time you checked your tyres to make sure they were blown up properly?
Well, funny enough, only the other day.
Good.
Have you ever had nitrogen-filled tyres?
I haven't, no.
No, I had it once. So if you have your tyres inflate, you can't do it, obviously, at a gas station, but if you go to... Tasha, we can have your tyres inflated with nitrogen and it doesn't leak as much. So they stay inflated longer. Usually little green caps if somebody's had that done.
Okay. Yeah. This is one I didn't know. I'm going to call it stop the top up. So when you go to the gas pump, the petrol pump, and you squeeze the pump and the petrol goes in, then it auto shuts off.
Yeah.
If you then think, oh, I'll just put a bit more extra in it to sort of top it up.
Round it out.
Round it out. You shouldn't do that, because that little bit extra, it bypasses, there's an emissions canister in the petrol filling up. That cutout is there for a reason. If you top it up, it bypasses that and the emissions escape into the atmosphere. So don't put that little bit extra in.
That's interesting. There's a question. If you eliminate an extra weight, whether you should actually run on a half-filled tank. Yeah. Anyway, that's by the by.
Yeah, good question. Leave the air conditioning off. That will you use more fuel. Drive as smoothly as you can. I know you're one for smooth driving, Russell.
Oh, yes.
Smooth that's gear changes. True. Don't over-accelerate. So drive really smoothly. And the best tip of all is...
Oh, yeah, for car
regarding cars and driving cars, is to walk or to cycle if you can.
Yeah.
So,
it's true. I barely touch my car now. Obviously, we're in the middle of lockdown in the UK. I went out in my car the other day, got stopped by the police because one light was out.
Yeah. So, anyway, some quick eco tips for driving your car. Now, a quick look behind the scenes. And this week, we want to talk about one thing, really, and that is Clubhouse. Myself and Russell have been on for a few weeks. And for those that don't know, it's the new up-and-coming social network that's audio only. And you can join and discuss with anybody. Join a room, discuss a topic. It's iPhone only at the moment, but... Myself and Russell, we're going to be hosting a Clubhouse room this Friday at 11 o'clock. So if you would like to have your stay live with us on the stories we've discussed this week, or if you have any of your own news and you want to chat to myself and Russell, come and join us on Clubhouse this Friday at 11. I think the room's called This Week in Sustainability with the Green Elephant. And yeah, we'd love to see as many of you there as, or hear as many of you as can possible can join us.
Well, there is a little icon. You got your little face there, so we'll actually see people.
You can see us, and we can see you. So that would be great. So yeah, get on Clubhouse. It'd be great to see you. And now it's time for one of my favourite times of the week, and we have it's fact or fake, and we have Emma Jones from Ethical Lives who is stepping up to the challenge. Not sure she knows what she let herself in for, but if you've listened to the interview, you'll know we've talked about the Ethical Lives store. And having looked at the Ethical Lives store, there's a variety of products, but there's numbers of skincare products and there's numbers of cork-based products. So for fact or fake this week, we're going to talk about skincare and cork. So, Emma, are you ready?
Yes, go on.
Here's your first of five. So, a cork tree that has its bark harvested will absorb 10 times more CO2 than one that doesn't. Is that a fact or is that a fake?
Well,
thinking going on.
I am, because I'm going to go back to photosynthesis, and I'm sure that's to go through the leaves, which is to do with the chlorophyll, isn't it? So that would be green, and the bark isn't green. So I'm going to go fake.
It's actually a fact. If you take the bark off every few years,
right,
then the cork tree actually absorbs more CO2. Right. And they keep on doing it for hundreds of years. Amazing, amazing trees.
So basically, that produces more
oxygen. So number two, the reason cork is so biodegradable is that it is 90% air.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, of course I can. The reason cork is so biodegradable is that it is 90% air.
I'm going to say true. Fact.
That is a fact. So cork is 90% air and degrades very easily. Amazing, amazing product, cork. But yeah, and go to the Ethical Lives store to see amazing cork products. On to skincare now. The average person uses 5 different skincare products on his or her body every day. Is that a fact or a fake?
So 5 different products for the average person every day.
Fact.
It's actually a fake. That's half the amount. It's 10 different products, the average person.
10.
That's a lot of lotions and potions, isn't it? So it's 10 different skincare products a day. Okay, so we know there's 10 a day. The average person absorbs 130 chemicals a day from the skincare products they use.
That's a tough one because it's like, it's the figure, isn't it? We know that we're absorbing the chemicals.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it only 130?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really tough one.
It is. We're quite mean on Fact or Fake.
Yeah, you are, aren't you? Warning about that. I think it could be higher. So I think it would be higher, actually. I'm just trying to think. I mean, there's like 1,000 chemicals in a cigarette, isn't there? You know?
Yeah.
Not that anyone's smoking, by the way, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah,
I'm trying to work out. I'm stalling. Okay. Fact.
It is a fact.
Okay.
So the average person, I mean, that and the chemicals industry kind of flies under the radar in sustainability a lot of the time. It's all about fossil fuels and energy and other stuff.
Yeah.
But chemicals are just, and 130 a day on average absorbed by people.
Yeah.
Frightening number. And finally, for fact or fake, 70% of the 10,500 ingredients in cosmetics and skincare, which are known to the FDA, this is American, the Food and Drug Administration, have not been tested for safety.
7%.
70%. So the FDA are aware of 10,500 ingredients in cosmetics and skincare products.
And have not been tested for safety.
But 70% have not been tested for safety.
Yeah, I'm going to go fact.
And again, it's a mean numbers one, but just to highlight the point, it's actually 90%.
Oh, my word. I think deep on that numbers one, yeah.
90% of the chemicals in skincare products have not been tested for safety.
It's actually not that difficult to get FDA approval.
No,
it's not really that hard.
Some shocking numbers there about what we might be putting on our...
The Cosmos approval.
Okay. Yeah. Great. We'll look that one up and link it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, Emma, thank you. And that concludes Fact or Fake for this week.
Okay. I'm just going to give you a fact or fiction as
okay.
well. Interesting you were saying about the chemicals with the skincare. So obviously I work in international trade, but when you export, okay, the HS code, when you drop down to find out your codes and tariffs, it's all under chemicals.
Okay.
There you go.
Right, I didn't know that.
Classification, formally, officially.
There we are. There's a bonus fact for our listeners.
There you go.
Thank you, Emma.
Okay, all right.
And finally, before we go, we talked about planned pigeonhood last week and pigeon contraception, but this week, news that the UK plans to reduce grey squirrel population via contraceptives. And the idea is to make this oral contraceptive as delicious as possible so that grey squirrels will follow their noses and want to eat it. I can imagine this sort of hazelnut flavoured contraceptives that are appealing to squirrels. But whether they'll be appealing to red squirrels or not, I don't know. But,
and female squirrels, or is it female and male squirrels?
So that's an interesting one to watch. Also news this week, a newly discovered nano chameleon,
which is beautiful.
The world's smallest known reptile, and it is absolutely teeny weeny on your fingertips. What's it known as? More pronunciation, Brookesia nana, or the nano chameleon. Can perch on and it's the smallest adult male of any species. It's 19 millimetres
Smallest reptile in the world, isn't it? Yeah.
19 millimetres long. So, have a look at that. And finally, before we go,
we talked about powering our vehicles by electric or by hydrogen, but even more renewable now in Karachi in India. The Minister for Climate says that they are planning to not use those kind of renewables, but they're going to generate energy from cow dung to power their buses in Karachi. He said the amount of diesel being imported was too much, and the amount, so they're going to start powering all their buses with cow dung.
Don't they hold the cow sacred? So, I mean, I suppose this is a good use, because they do have a lot of cows over there.
They do. I'm interested to go to Karachi in future and see how it smells.
Well, yeah. Let's hope they can cut down the smell as it comes out.
Absolutely. If you've enjoyed the show, then please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave us a review, and links to find us on all the usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit, and if you can, subscribe, because it really helps us to continue to make the show and keep you entertained. So hopefully we'll see you at greenelephant.show. Or on social, we're at greenelipod. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.